Hi, everyone. Lee Arnold here with another edition of Country Music Conversations. Our guest this week lives up to the title of being a legend. His name? Farron Young, also known as the Singing Sheriff or Hillbilly Heartthrob. Both nicknames earned because of him starring in films as a singing sheriff. But before we start this conversation, here are a few words from our sponsor. Country Music Conversations with Lee Arnold's podcast is made possible by our sponsor, MarketSmith, Inc., the digital media agency that's been growing brands like Tumi, SharkNinja, New Jersey Lottery, PSE&G, Blue Mercury Cosmetics, and Dick's Sporting Goods. You know what makes this agency so good at what they do? Because simply being a marketing agency is no longer enough. Solution-based, problem-solving, and ever-evolving, they create enduring value for DTC and B2B brands by opening up and growing marketing channels. Their patented AI offerings, informed by human intelligence, allow them to act with agility and intellect. I was speaking with the CEO not too long ago, and she was saying they take on clients who know who they are, who want to grow, and clients that know what they want. These big brands choose MarketSmith because they want to merge with a partner who'll make them exceptional and an agency that will grow their revenue. Digital marketing is not easy, but MarketSmith, Inc. knows when to make the media dollars work hard for their clients. You have a brand you want to grow? Well, contact MarketSmith.com and tell them Lee Arnold sent you. Farron wore many hats in his life. Country music producer, singer, musician, and songwriter. Born in Shreveport, Louisiana, he grew up on his family's dairy farm. He started singing pop music at an early age. And after hearing Hank Williams sing on the Louisiana Hayride, he switched to country music and never looked back. He was discovered by Webb Pierce, who brought him to star on the Hayride. And then in 1952, he was signed to Capitol Records, and he moved to Nashville. His first chart hit was Going Steady, but his career was sidetracked when he was drafted into the Army. His next hit was If You Ain't Lovin', and he was discharged in 1954. Between 1954 and 1962, he cut many honky-tonk songs, including Sweet Dreams and Willie Nelson's Hello Walls. During the mid-50s, he appeared in four low-budget films. And with his famous band, The Deputies, he was featured on the Ozark Jubilee on ABC TV. Farron invested in real estate in Nashville, and he co-founded the trade magazine Music City News. He left Capitol Records in 1963, and he signed with Mercury Records, where he scored hits like Wind Me Up and It's 4 in the Morning. By 1979, he left Mercury Records for MCA, which lasted for 2 years. He then signed with Step One Records and stayed with them through the 90s. Even though he was a major talent, Farron had his demons in the form of alcohol and depression. He had a strong personality, which could get ugly at times. He met and married his wife, Hilda, while he was in the Army. And they had four children, Damien, Robin, Kevin, and a daughter, Alana. He refused to address his problem with alcohol and finally divorced Hilda in 1986 after 32 years of marriage. A combination of feeling he had been abandoned by country music and also despondency over his deteriorating health were cited as possible reasons for him committing suicide. He was only 64 years old. And in 2000, Farron was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. For many years, I knew Farron, and whenever we were together, he was always in a good mood, and he loved to talk and had a great sense of humor. This conversation took place in the late 80s at Fort Laramie, Ohio. We chatted about many things, how he got the name the Singing Sheriff, his band the Deputies, his drinking problem, and how he would like to be remembered. Here now is Farron Young.
How long you go back, Farron, but I think you invented country music. You've been around so long. Farron Young, the Singing Sheriff, is with us. How are you, Farron?
Thank you, Lee. No, I didn't invent it. It was around a long time before I got here, but I've had 36 years of it, which has been 36 good years.
You really are one of the true country legends that are left, that are around, still performing today. Not many are going out there to do the schedule that you do.
Well, I tell you, I was very lucky, though, Lee. I got an early start in this business. I was really what you call an overnight success, where some of these guys worked at it 15, 20 years before it happened. But I had my first hit record when I was like 20 years old, and had 32 number one records since then, and 70-something top 10 records. But I didn't have to really be. I come right out of college, went straight into country music, and it everything worked for me right away. So a lot of people think that I must be 150 years old. They've been hearing me so long.
Nicknames, for the most part, stick for a long, long time. I guess yours has stuck ever since the beginning, the Singing Sheriff, which you've been known as. Who gave you that tag?
Well, I made a motion picture back in 1955, and at that time, everybody had a name, like Ernest Tubb, the Troubadour, and Hank Snow, the Singing Ranger, and they just dubbed that with me on the Singing Sheriff. They called me the Young Sheriff then, but now I'm 56 years old, we call him the Singing Sheriff.
There's a lot of young talent out there in country music today that are doing very, very well. Apparently the big stars in country music, I guess, would be under the age of 40 outside of K.T. Aslan these days. How do you assess some of the young talent you're hearing around the country today?
Well, first of all, I think it's great we're getting new talent in the industry. You need that. Back when I first started, I was very lucky because I was just a kid to get in it. And some of the older heads in the music business and didn't really care about kids getting in this business. But somebody's got to replace us. And I'm just happy to see people like Randy Travis and George Strait and all that, and Reba McEntire and them come along. If they'll keep it country, they're fixing to ruin Reba, I think, with all the stuff she's been putting out. She needs to get back to the country line, which where she started. But I enjoy the new title. I think we need it, and I think it's a great additive to the country music industry. And it's a well-needed source of entertainment. We just need it.
Do you think it was easier in your time, when you were first starting out in country, to make it as opposed to the kids starting out today? It seems there were a lot more places to play and there was a better training ground.
Yeah, I think it was easier for me, but although there wasn't about 20 or 30 of us then. But it would be rougher for the kids today because there's 40, 50,000 of them trying to get in the music industry. But yeah, I think it was, like I said, really easier for us than it would be right now to try to break into this industry because there's too many artists, there's too many people.
You never know how well songs are going to do until they've been around a long, long time. One of the hits that comes to mind is Live Fast, Love Hard, and Die Young, probably one of the greatest of all Farron Young hits, recently cut in an album by George Strait. What was your reaction to it?
Well, I was happy that he did it. I didn't know. I thought he did a If You Ain't Loving, You Ain't Living.
I mean, If You Ain't Loving, You Ain't Living. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I got it confused.
Yeah, If You Ain't Loving, You Ain't Living. I haven't heard it, but I know it. But I didn't write it either, so I ain't going to make no money out of it. I'm sure Tommy Collins is happy. He wrote it.
You belong to a very prestigious group, the golden group of country music, some of the most well-known names that ever was or ever will be in country music. Real stars, what they call star quality, people around the Grand Ole Opry for years and years and years. Patsy Cline, I know you had a lot of memories with her.
Well, Patsy, I guess, was one of the greatest girl singers. See, back when Patsy came along, there wasn't about three or four girl singers in our industry. Now, if you look in the charts, there's 50% of women in the charts, like the Judds and all these different girl singers are coming along. But back then, it was hard for a girl to get into the industry back when Patsy did it. I think it was Kitty Wells and Gene Shepherd. And Loretta wasn't
came
it?
Came later.
Loretta came after Patsy, yeah.
What about Hank Williams Sr.? You knew him.
Oh, Hank was a great guy. He was a kind of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type of guy, depending on if he was drinking or not drinking. He's like me. When I drink, I'm one guy. When I don't drink, I'm another guy. I'm a Jekyll and Hyde myself, and so was Hank. But Hank was a real, real good guy, a real nice guy.
What do you think his most outstanding quality was as a human being or as a performer?
I think his sincerity is what sold Hank. Hank wasn't really gifted with no great quality voice. He wasn't no Eddie Arnold or Marty Robbins, but he had the heart and soul and sincerity in his music, and I think that's what made him a legend.
some other great legends and names come to mind, Farron, who you worked with through the years and helped through the years, people like Ray Price.
Well, Ray, to me, is one of the best country singers that ever lived. Him and George Jones, to me, are fantastic country singers. And also, Ray's a good pop singer. He sings about anything he wants to.
If there's anybody you're identified with, I guess more than any other, who helped to get you one of the biggest records of your career, was Willie Nelson with a song called Hello Walls.
Yeah, you know, the sad thing about having a record like Hello Walls, it makes people forget all the hits you had before it. I already had about 15 number one records, and then people come up and they say, boy, I love that Hello Walls. I said, well, didn't you ever hear of Sweet Dreams or Live Fast, Love Hard or Going Steady or Wind Me Up or all those songs? I got by on Saturday. Oh, those was yours too?
There's a great story that you had with Willie Nelson recently. Was it a couple of years ago about that bull that he gave you or that cow?
Yeah, I loaned him some money way back in the 50s or in the 60s it was. And he never did pay me back. He finally told me he was going to raise a bull and have it slaughtered and give me the beef in lieu of the payment of the money. So I said, that's fine. So about 4 years later, I saw Willie. I said, how's that bull doing? He said, you ought to see him. He weighs 10,000 pounds. He's getting fatter every day. So finally, one day, he shipped me a bull up there, a big $20,000 prize Simmental bull. And I got a one-acre lot. So I carried it down to Jimmy Newman's farm.
That's a great story. The Louisiana Hayride was also a great springboard to success for people that really became stars later in the Grand Ole Opry down in Shreveport. You worked there, too.
Yeah, you know, the Hayride could have been a big, big thing if it had management, but they had a bunch of idiots that ran the Louisiana Hayride. Back then, they were all grown to me, and I was scared of them and thought they were geniuses. But as I got older and learned, I figured out really what idiots the people who managed the KWKH and the Louisiana Hayride were. Because all the stars walked right through those doors. Hank Williams, Johnny and Jack, Kitty Wells, Jim Rees, Vernon Young, Webb Pierce, just name them. They all came through there.
Interesting story. Through the years, I guess, one of the most important things for any country artist or entertainer is to have a good bunch of people in back of them that back them up, because they really make the difference as far as pickers are concerned in a band. Your deputies have been really an outstanding group through the years, and a lot of great alumni have passed through your portals of country music through the deputies. Who were some of the great names that were once played with you, Farron?
Well, I had some pretty good guys. I remember Johnny Paycheck, who used to be called Donnie Young. He worked for me for a while, and Daryl McCall with me, and Roger Miller was my drummer for a while, and then I used to carry people on the road on my road show, but like George Jones worked for me, and Buck Owens, and Wynn Stewart. So I knew they all had talent. I knew someday they'd make it, and they did too.
Incredible story. How important would you say is the Grand Ole Opry today? At one time, it really was the keyboard to success for every country artist, because back with hit records and appearances on the Opry, that was a vehicle that gave them popularity to play dates all throughout the country. How important is the Opry today?
Well, I think the Opry will always have its importance and its place in our industry, because it's a legend itself. But I don't think it can make a star today like it did me when I went on it. Back in the early 50s, it was a lot more powerful in producing and turning out a star. Nowadays, guys got to be a damn star to get on it. You know, they get somebody like a Ricky Van Shelton or somebody like that, two or three hit record, and then they, big deal, we signed him to the Grand Ole Opry. Big deal, he may work there twice a year.
Right. Do you think video has ruined all of this?
Oh, no, I don't think so, no. It's such a legend itself. WSM's Grand Ole Opry is a legend, and people are going to go there. It's 50, 60 years old now, isn't it? And I just think it's got its place, just like, you know, it is really the legend of our industry, the Opry.
You've really seen an awful lot of artists throughout the years, fellow contemporaries of yours who made it and then lost it because of things like drugs and alcohol. You yourself, I guess, had a reputation one time as a little bit of a hellraiser.
Well, I'm still a hellraiser, and I still drink. But I never got, I don't think the whiskey ever hurt the guys as bad as the dope did. And I never got into dope. I never took the pills or sniffed cocaine or all that pot and all the things them guys got into. Because I could drink some whiskey and get drunk for the next 3 days. I'm sick as a damn mule. But those guys sniffing that dope, they do it every 30 minutes. And it's been the downfall of a lot of them.
Unfortunately,
like Ray Emmett.
No. As we point to one of the current figures. What about your days in the Army? Did that help your country music career fairly back in the 50s?
It had to. I think public sympathy. Because here I was with a brand new hit record, making a lot of money, and I got drafted into the Army for $87.50 a month. But I got on into the radio show and recruiting in the Army, and we were on like a couple thousand radio stations a week with the Circle A Wranglers, PFC Fur and Young. So it was definitely asked that to me.
Who was the man who discovered Fur and Young? Who would you say was the most important person in your career who made the difference?
Well, Webb Pierce first hired me, but the guy that really made the difference, we was doing early morning radio shows on KWKH, and a man by the name of Ken Nelson with Capitol Records heard me on the radio, and he flew in, talked to me, and signed me on Capitol Records. I think he was one of the biggest influences on my career.
He probably was a turning point that really made the difference of you becoming a big star, would you say?
Well, I do. You know, but it's like you take Elvis Presley. He didn't have to have Tom Parker. Me or you could have managed that because he was destined to be a star. But you can always pay homage to the ones that helped you. And Ken Nelson was a great help to me. And then later on, one of my managers, Hubert Long, was a great help to me. And Webb was a great help to me. A lot of people really were.
Looking back through all the years, Farron, what would you say, if you had to pinpoint one specific point, was probably your happiest memory in country music to date?
The day before I got into country music.
Really?
No, I'm only kidding.
I never can talk serious with you.
I think one of my happiest days really was signing the contract with Capitol and my first appearance on the Grand Ole Opry. Would have been a high point. And making my first motion picture. I think the first of anything that you did.
What would you say was the personal pick of your best performance on record that you would cite as the best record you ever had, that you enjoyed doing?
Don't put me on that thing now, Lee. I don't really know.
You don't?
Because I've enjoyed a bunch of the material I did, because otherwise I wouldn't have recorded it. I had songs I didn't like that were kind of forced down my throat, but I ended up being wrong because they were hit records. I didn't like the songs themselves, but they did hit. In fact, one you mentioned earlier, Live Fast and Love Hard and Die Young, I hated that song. It became my number one record, you know. But I cut a lot of material I loved and it never did hit.
Let's talk about some of the great songs of your career, maybe a little bit story behind them. I guess probably the quintessential country ballad of all time that you recorded is Four in the Morning. That song touches everybody's life, whether they've experienced that scene or not.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I think you look back to things like Sweet Dreams. I was the first one to record Sweet Dreams in 1954. And it was the number one hit for me. Then later on, Patsy Cline recorded. And so the younger kids today think that's Patsy's hit. They forgot that I had it first. But she recorded it, went to number one. And after her, Don Gibson, the guy that wrote it, he had it at number one. And then after that, Emmylou Harris cut it again. It went to number one again. So this song has been number one four times by four different artists. I'd like to have been the writer.
When you cut it, did you realize it was going to be a hit?
I don't think nobody knows, but I thought it was. But Webb Pierce brought me that song.
He did?
Uh-huh.
Sure. You found it from Don?
Don first recorded it on some little label, and we covered Don, and that killed him out on it. But he later came back on a major label and hit with it.
Back in 1952, you had a very big record called Going Steady, which has always been part of your act from time to time. Was there a special story behind that one?
Well, I wrote that song. I was on tour with Hank Snow when I wrote it. It was up in Iowa. And I remember the first night I sang it after I got through, it was up in Des Moines, Iowa. And it was my first hit. And it was also the one that I went in the Army. When I went in the Army, that helped me get into special service because I had a hit record.
It's a Great Life, another great Farron Young song from way back when.
I don't ever sing that song anymore. You know, a lot of people associate songs with different events in their life. I know, like when Hank Williams wrote, I'll never get out of this world alive, he died. When I record It's a Great Life, You Don't Weaken, I got hepatitis and went in the hospital for 6 months. So they scare me sometimes.
How about This Little Girl of Mine? Any memories on that one?
Well, that really is what's one of my favorite songs. That I recorded it back when my little daughter was first born, about 18 years ago. Yeah, and that's one of my enjoyable. If you ask one of my favorites, that's one of my favorites.
How about Wind Me Up? You still get a kick out of doing that?
Oh, yeah. We open our show with Wind Me Up Yeah, we get a lot of requests for it. That's part of the Fair and Young show.
What's the secret of success for longevity for a country music artist? What would be your advice, Farron?
Well, my advice to anybody is just remember, just because you're an entertainer, the world don't owe you a living. And this is a job. You know it's a job. You're out here today. It's 96 degrees. Mm-hmm. We've driven all night long to get up here. We leave here. We got to drive all night to get to another date up in New York. It's not a glory thing. It looks great when you see you on stage, but they know what the hell you go through after that. The trouble of getting there and the other work is involved. The work of looking for material, the work of recording, the work of doing television, all it is a hard job. It's not, I mean, I'd compare it to a farmer's life, because we work. We really have to work hard this industry, and because there's always somebody standing around waiting to take your place. So if you don't keep up with it and love the people, which I love, I don't work now about 100 dates a year, where I used to work 250 dates a year. But I still got to go out and work. I cannot stand not to be on this road and around these people, because I love them. And I think that reflects in my music and my personality and my talking to them. I think they know I love them.
I understand you just recorded another album for One Step.
Yeah, Step One.
I mean Step One Record.
That'll be out in about, wait a minute.
Your recording career has continued. You are now on Step One Records, and a new album's coming out.
Should be out. The single should be out in about 3 weeks. And we'll wait and see what happens with it. And if it don't hit, we'll put out another single on it. But I want to get a hit before I put the album out. But if it don't, then we're going to put the album out.
Tell me, Farron, how would you like to be remembered in country music? What would be your legacy?
My legacy would be, I told you folks I was sick. No. Put it on my tombstone. Said, live fast, love hard, and die fair and young. That should be it.
That sums it up.
But I did the best I could. Even though I had flaws, I'm not perfect, I did the best I could. And I'll always love you and always remember you.
Thank you, Farron. Thanks for joining us today. Good luck in the recording career. Stay cool here in, where are we? Somewhere in Ohio.
We're in Fort Laramie.
That's it.
And it's 174 degrees. That's what it is. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Farron.
And there's our visit with Farron Young. Join me next week on Country Music Conversations, when we'll go swinging with John Anderson. Until then, Lee Arnold reminding you to stay safe and keep it country.